That's you. Thank you, Richard. That was a really nice introduction to set the stage for everyone else. And next we have Dr. Rose, who's going to give us the three P's of expanded syringe access.
Thank you. So I also want to say that we're, Glenn and I, right here to my left, are very happy to be part of this panel and that we have nothing to disclose, no relationships to disclose. After listening to Richard's, which I've heard before, I think, why am I up here? Well, because we did a little qualitative study of many of the health departments so we got in-depth responses from them but in addition to the responses that they gave on their survey. So we explored a little bit further what their comments meant. So I want to also thank and acknowledge our co-investigators, Alexis Martinez and Willie McFarland, and give a special thanks to the public health departments, AIDS program directors, the city and county officials, and SEP, Syringe Exchange Program coordinators, because it's a mouthful. I want to thank all of them for participating in our study and our funder, the California HIV/AIDS Research Program. So our study was a two-year qualitative study conducted in late 2005 through 2007, and we used purposeful sampling in order to select 13, I'm going to use the word counties instead of LHJs or public health departments, 13 counties based on several factors. One factor was high, medium, and low prevalence of HIV and AIDS. High we classified as greater than 2,000 cases of HIV/AIDS per 100,000. Medium was 76 to under 200,000, and low was less than 50,000 cases of HIV/AIDS in the county. We also wanted to represent the state, so we had geographic coverage. We selected counties among those 13 who also had a history of progressive IDU policies, and LHJs, counties, that had adopted and not adopted SB 1159, and those categories were not mutually exclusive. Our specific aims were to look at the policies and practices that health departments used in order to implement. So Richard's study and Tom's study talked about the status and some of those policies and practices and procedures, and we got a little bit more in-depth information about what those were. We also wanted to look at, again, in-depth, what the factors were that facilitated or inhibited local implementation. A second component of our study was to map the proximity of syringe access to need among injection drug users, and our third was to disseminate an advocacy toolkit. We conducted semi-structured qualitative interviews that lasted about an hour with AIDS program managers, almost exclusively AIDS program managers, city and county officials, SEP coordinators, and we reviewed public transcripts of testimony that had been given in certain counties. For the mapping component, Dr. Martinez used GIS mapping to plot the locations of SEPs, pharmacies, and methadone programs. So we covered, as I said, the state. We had the Bay Area of San Francisco, including Santa Cruz. We had the capital area of Sacramento and Yuba. We had Fresno in the Central Valley, Shasta in the northern part of the state, and in the southern part of the state, both the city and the county of Los Angeles and Riverside County. So of these counties, six we classified as adopters, implementers. Two adopter implementer cities, one adopter non-implementer county, and three non-adopter counties. Two counties were also invited to participate but refused to participate based on political concerns, and one of those was San Diego. All but one of these counties has a known syringe exchange program, and some of those programs are unauthorized, meaning they're allowed to work but they aren't necessarily funded. Our policymaker counties where we did interviews included the same counties, and we added Yolo and the city of Sacramento, and we reviewed transcripts from Los Angeles, Riverside, the city of Elk Grove in Sacramento County. We did SEP interviews in Marin, Fresno, and one of the syringe exchange programs in Los Angeles and in Santa Cruz. For the mapping component, our counties were San Francisco, which is an adopter implementer, and San Joaquin, which is a non-adopter county. And so, what did we discover? Using some of the same measures as the local health jurisdiction survey, we asked the questions about what facilitated and what got in the way of approval of SB 1159. So, among adopters, successful implementation was related to leadership within the public health department, usually the health director or the health officer and the AIDS program manager. And what they did is they brought together stakeholders to the planning table, and those stakeholders were their own staff, pharmacists, policymakers, waste management, environmental health, and others. They shared materials, they copied language for ordinances and resolutions so no one had to recreate the wheel each time, and developed relationships that would serve them throughout this coalition. They also dug into that other duties as described phrase in their job descriptions to find the time and to make the time to get the legislation implemented locally. They also, most importantly, had their syringe disposal plans in place in advance. So those are some of the common themes to what led the success of a county to adopt SB 1159, adopt and implement. So some of the themes and barriers among the non-adopters, AIDS program managers reported having no time, and as time went on, upwards of a year, SB 1159, as Richard pointed out, became a lower priority, and most notably, it became a lower priority because of bioterrorism. And in some counties, there was not the thought that HIV was presented a serious problem among IDUs, although those counties admitted that HCV was indeed a problem. Political or community concerns, whether real or perceived, were cited as a barrier. And that's that. And now, just a couple of quotes from public health departments, and then Glenn's going to talk to you about the policymaker interviews. So in these quotes, you can see examples of public health leadership, where in two cases, the public health director or the health officer was just about ready to retire. So they became, even though a tireless advocate, kind of a lame duck that wasn't necessarily going to go forward with the policy. Several others introduced the legislation as non-controversial and said, we slid it in under the radar when no one was looking, and said, no one, everyone else is doing it. It's the state law. We have to do it. And so whatever worked, worked. So for the non-adopters, they kind of gave up when their efforts were thwarted by their own local boards of supervisors or others who showed their opposition in one way or the other. So you can see there's a little naivete on the fact of on the quote, on the last quote there, that I don't want my wife standing next to a drug user in a drugstore. So let me turn it over to Glenn to talk about the results of our policymaker interviews.
Hi, I'm Glenn. And let's see if I can figure out how to work the machine. Great. So California has this weird setup where elected officials in a public setting have to vote yes or no on allowing pharmacists to sell syringes to adults. So a city council member or a county supervisor. There's five county supervisors in each county, and we have to get at least three of them to say, yes, we're going to let pharmacists have the right to make this decision. So there's these layers. We had to pass the state legislature, it gets kicked down to the county or the city, so it can be a county decision or a municipality. Then it's politicized there. And then it's kicked down to the pharmacies, and then the public health staff has the job of trying to get pharmacies to enroll, because the pharmacist has to fax in a form saying, I'm going to do this. So there's layer upon layer in California to getting this to roll out. But basically, politics is always kicked down to the next level. My job on this particular study was to interview elected officials who are given the power and job.
Sorry.
Don't touch anything!
That's why we collaborate.
That's right. So these folks actually have the authority to say yes or no, and they have the responsibility to say yes or no. And what was interesting in doing interviews with them, because I did the structured interview, is I think this is fairly unusual. They certainly said that no one had ever come to me to ask me, and my questions were basically, what decision did you make? Why did you make that decision? Who did you listen to? I would reiterate it in different ways, but those were the basic questions. What decision did you make? Why? And who did you listen to? What was the most important argument? What arguments weren't credible, who didn't seem credible, and then we had a discussion, usually took about an hour. 9 interviews face-to-face, 7 with elected officials, either city council or county supervisor, to a staff that had been told by their boss to meet with me and do this interview. We had some places that we weren't getting very good response to all the letters and calls I was doing, so we added in Los Angeles County, reviewing the public record, the video and audio transcripts of the hearings, and the newspaper reporting. So that's all public domain stuff I could use. Did the same thing for Riverside County, which was a non-adopter, and the city of Elk Grove, because in Sacramento we had an unusual circumstance where the health officer was sent to every municipality in the county to present this and get their feedback. So we were looking for themes. I'm just going to run over what the themes of people who voted yes and voted no said, and also themes that were brought up by opposition or support in the public sphere. So common themes amongst those who voted yes was no controversy. A typical quote was sort of like Valerie said, slid under the radar. Many of the people who voted yes recalled the SEP debates of the 90s and sort of formed their opinions of syringe access during that time. But the same folks would also say, we've come a long way since 96 or 99. When we discussed needle exchange in the 90s, we had a whole lot of controversy. This time, nobody showed up. One quote was, this wasn't one of those where hundreds of people showed up to the hearing. Adopters were convinced by the empirical evidence that the studies that were presented to them, the stacks of studies, they were convinced that they were valid. So they just, you know, they understood the public health rationale and accepted it as true. You'll find with not people who voted no that they did not believe the wealth of research. Also common in the adopters, the ones who voted yes, was the central role of the health officer. When asked, who did you rely on for accurate information, 7 out of 8 people who responded to that question said the public health officer. One said my sister, she's a nurse. The CBOs and a theme of about where places people said yes, in addition to the health officer being a credible witness, a credible source of information, they talked about aid service organizations, gay and lesbian political clubs, and health officials taking part in the debate. Those were people who voted yes, even in a county where it didn't get passed. It's worth noting that the people who were convinced that it was a good idea did like doctors and believe nurses and believe public health professionals. In Sacramento, though, we had hours upon hours of evidence presented by medical professionals. The dean of the medical school came. 200 doctors signed a letter of support. The hearings were completely dominated by health officials in support and drug treatment officials in support, and it still failed because of opposition from law enforcement and other active folks. This was a finding that surprised me. Both adopters and non-adopters said the word hepatitis somewhere in the interview. Hepatitis wasn't in the questionnaire. It wasn't in my letter to them. The fact that they identified hepatitis as a concern was of interest to me. Typically, my interviews were between 2 months and 14 months after this vote, and they've been doing a lot of business since then. They remembered. 2 minutes? I'm sorry, Valerie. I'm going to wrap up.
Okay.
They identified opposition. Unsafe syringe discard is the number one issue that came up over and over. This is something that we can work on as public health professionals, trying to make syringe disposal work better. Government liabilities for needle sticks was a red herring put forward by the opposition, that the local government would be sued if someone got a needle stick. Another thing we can work on is loss of probable cause. Law enforcement officials opposing this say, I will not be able to search the car or the person who's carrying a syringe if we authorize this. That may not be so, because certainly they can search someone if they find baggies and a scale in the back of the car. They're holding this forth as a reason to oppose. You're going to make it hard for me to do my job. We need to find out if that is actually true, and we need to talk to some lawyers to see. Otherwise, some of the same old things you hear, even if you make them legal, drug users share needles as a social ritual. Narcotics officers and others present the red herrings from using the Montreal and Vancouver studies still to say that needle exchange and syringe access doesn't work, and some folks just say in public, addicts don't care, it doesn't matter what you do. So I'm going to give it back to Valerie. This slide just says that both sides shared a belief that law enforcement opinion is important, that there's not enough drug treatment to go around, that physician medical groups are effective advocates, and opposition and support use the phrase harm reduction. They just use it differently. The opposition says don't reduce the threat of harm because you need that threat of harm to keep people from using drugs. Supporters say also understand the terms of harm reduction as a risk minimization strategy that doesn't eliminate all such risks. Valerie, it's yours to wrap up that last minute. Sorry that we couldn't go through more fun quotes.
In the interest of time, I'm going to go to this slide here, which I wish it were bigger. The GIS mapping component looked at San Francisco and San Joaquin, and what you see on these maps, I don't know how to use that mouse like Richard did. Oh, there we go. Okay. So the red is, I can't even see that far. The red is the pharmacy, is that right?
Red Cross.
The Red Cross is the pharmacy on the left here of San Francisco. Oh, I can look here. The star is a syringe exchange program, and the yellow diamond is a methadone program. So in San Francisco, there were at this time 76 pharmacies enrolled. There are 9 syringe exchange programs and 5 methadone programs. And you see by the color coding of the levels of poverty, so you see that the majority of the cases in San Francisco, and actually the majority of pharmacies and syringe exchange programs, are in high areas of poverty. We did not map HIV in San Joaquin County, and this is just Stockton, within the largest city within San Joaquin County. We mapped HCV because it's a much larger number than HIV cases. We did not want to compromise any kind of confidentiality by mapping HIV cases. So what you see here is that we mapped pharmacies and we mapped hepatitis C cases. We don't map methadone programs because as of 2006, the information that I've read recently is there are no methadone programs except at the county jail and except at the county hospital. So we think GIS mapping is important, especially for counties that maybe are still in the planning stages. Those 35 that are never going to do it, this may not be of any use to them, but we hope that this can be transferable to them. So the same conclusions as Richard came up with: you need public health leadership in order to lead the charge. You need to have a collaborative process using your known allies, including the media. You want to educate law enforcement and counteract their opposition with sincerity and honesty. And keep syringe disposal in perspective. Many of our counties had very innovative practices for their syringe disposal programs. It just became law September 1st that it is now illegal to dispose of a syringe in the trash. So counties now that are still planning have to consider that as well. We look for a simple enrollment process. Some of the processes are online, some of them are by fax, some of them are very simple. Just send us your pharmacy certificate and you're enrolled. Use diffusion to replicate materials that have been used in other counties. And consider strategic pharmacy enrollment. And what I mean by that is, particularly in Stockton, there are many pharmacies that are in areas where HCV is, so you could just enroll some of them strategically. In San Francisco, while coverage is good, there still may be some areas that they may want to consider enrolling different pharmacies. And then conduct evaluation and make that evaluation as simple as possible so that both the pharmacies and the health department can do it. And that's it. And I want to say that our toolkit that I mentioned earlier is available on calhep.org, and I encourage you to look at it. Every county in the state should have gotten one, and if you didn't get one, you can see it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Valerie and Glenn. That was really a nice kind of a mixed methods approach. The qualitative data was rich, and hopefully if we have time after this session, we can see some more of your quotes. I didn't mean to cut you off. Is the next presentation on here? I don't know. Oops. There we go. Can I close this out?